And we return. It is today's topical current, 7 minutes past 1 o'clock. Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman. Well, tomorrow begins the 2014 legislative session in Tallahassee. It's always an entertaining time of year for Florida news junkie types. And we have a panel of experienced and independent watchdoggers, experienced hands in the studio to preview this year's gathering. First is Watchdog Report publisher and regular contributor Dan Ricker. Always good to see you, Dan.
Always a pleasure, Joe. Thank you.
And we also welcome veteran journalist Elaine DeValle. She publishes Political Cortadito under the nom de plume Ladra. Welcome to you.
Thank you for having me.
And also we have Broward Bulldog founder and award-winning investigative reporter Dan Christensen joining us once again. Welcome to you, Dan.
Hey, Joe.
Bonnie, why don't you start things off?
Well, let's see. Mary Ellen Klaus said in yesterday's Herald it's all about buying in on the legislative agenda. And is it unusual to have a situation where many of the decisions about what issues make it onto the agenda have already been made? Is that unusual? Elaine?
I don't think so. I think that people who've been observing this for a while, year after year, see the same players. And there's definitely a sentiment that there's a pay-for-play situation going on in Tallahassee, as some people, you know, suggest in the micro-local governmental levels as well. But, yeah, a lot of these things have been discussed throughout the year. The session is only 60 days, and I think it would be kind of foolish for us to think that these people are only thinking about these things for 60 days.
I think it's funny, the idea, you know, all through that story yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Dan Ricker.
Was the idea of, oh, we're just paying for access. I mean, it's, you know, and that, you know, the legislators will do the right thing because, you know, ultimately they're responsible to the voters. Is that, but yet, when you're, I mean, some of these numbers are fantastic.
Yes.
500,000.
Yes.
I mean, this has gone way beyond, you know, as Gwen Margolis, the former first woman president Senate, you know, said, you know, she'd raised $1 million back in 72 when she was president or whatever, you know, but the numbers now have just taken on such a level that it's hard to understand how that isn't affecting. And clearly you wouldn't be giving that kind of money if it wasn't giving you more than access.
So why are the numbers so big now, Dan?
Part of it is that the cost of doing business is going up, I gather. I mean, I don't understand it on a personal level. I mean, you're supposed to have access to all your public officials and not have to pay for it. Apparently, they all seem to think that they do. And I think it's much more than access that they're seeking. They're attempting to influence.
To buy them.
Yeah, exactly.
I agree.
And I was just saying, and that's something that has only intensified over the last decade. I mean, not like it was small 10 years ago or even 20 years ago, but the numbers just keep accelerating.
All representatives are up for re-election and 20 senators. How does that affect the legislative action, and how will it affect the governor's actions?
I think they're all thinking about money first and foremost.
But they don't want to rock too many boats either.
No, they don't want to
rock
too
many boats. And today's the last day they can get money.
For a couple of months.
Yeah, for a couple of months.
Yeah, so. I don't think they're going to bite the bullet on anything major this year because it's an election year. But, you know, to follow up on what we're talking about, I think that if anybody does a forensic audit or an analysis, maybe even just an Excel analysis of the ECOs and the PACs and the money that gets poured into there, and then the bills that are sponsored and by who they're sponsored, I think that you will definitely see some connections that are pretty apparent.
I was kind of surprised in looking at all the bills that are up that there was no mention of alimony reform. What happened to that? Is that not on the agenda this year?
It's not sexy enough. That's not a sexy topic. Nobody wants to talk about that.
They don't want to touch it, you mean, because of the election?
Oh, because of the election and because it's just not it's not a topic that's going to help you rise to the top or gain any favors.
Right. It seems like gambling is dominating the agenda early on. That, and then it's like Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. There are these other, you know, issues that are talked about. But I mean, you know, in Broward, we don't seem to have a whole lot of leadership in the legislature. Number one, they're all mostly Democrats, so that's a problem in a Republican-dominated legislature. But beyond that, there's no big thinking that I've seen coming out of at least Broward County, which is where I'm most familiar. Chris Smith, who's the Senate Minority Leader, wants to reform Stand Your Ground, which is fine, but it's a very limited, I think, type of issue here. They're not looking at the big picture there. Another bill by another, I think it's by Maria Sachs, Senator Maria Sachs, is about parasailing safety and regulations.
Right. Yeah.
These are fine things, but there are other more compelling issues out there, such as tuition reform for immigration and other things that seem to me should be emphasized and pushed a lot stronger.
Well, we have raising the speed limit, too.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
You know,
that's
Joe, a very pressing issue.
I mean, a couple of years ago when the gambling issue first came up, I kept writing that, in fact, I didn't think it was going to go anywhere in the House or the Senate at the time. And people would ask me, why are you so firm on that? And I said, the elected leaders want the money to keep coming. And, they've had like two or three years now of this gravy train of a lot of money coming in from all over. Plus you have Disney who's fighting it. The mouse is very upset.
I need to clarify when I mentioned the speed limit raise, that's in rural areas. It would go to 75 miles an hour. It's not a statewide thing.
Well, it's already at that 95.
Well, in terms of the money, I think perhaps there's a sense of civic pride that might accompany that issue here, because we have the distinction, Miami, Coral Gables, of having the single biggest donor to the governor this year. He wrote $1 million check, which a couple of years ago would have been illegal, but now all bets are off and you can...
And who would that be?
Mike Fernandez.
Miguel Fernandez. He owns MBF Healthcare Partners. He's a healthcare entrepreneur. He owns a number of Medicaid corporations that have gotten contracts. Everybody says everything was on the up and up with those contracts, and they may have been. We don't know.
Right, but there's also a couple of health-related bills on the agenda this year as well. So we have
Have been in the past, too.
There always are.
Right.
So.
It gives it a, I've spoken with him once. I don't really know the man, but it certainly gives the appearance of a potential for abuse. Let's put it that way.
Well, what's interesting with Mike is he was also a big Alex Pinellas supporter. So at one time he was a D, and I guess he's moved on. But I mean, he was one of Mayor Pinellas' big backers in the past.
Party has not always been the major consideration, though, especially in Broward County. It's always been referred to up there as somewhat of an old boys network, and at party doesn't matter all that much.
Let's let our listeners get to know a little more about the leaders in both the House and the Senate.
Elaine?
Well, I mean, we have, are you talking about the House Speaker and the Senate
President? And the Senate President and their underlings.
Well, Will Weatherford, is from Chapel Hill. I don't know much about him being a Miami-Dade, local watchdog. But I do know that on the gambling issue, he's made, pretty certain that he does not want to have this discussion until Governor Scott renegotiates the compact with the Native Americans, which are the Seminoles and the Miccosukees. Right now, the gambling bill, as written in the Senate, would expand gambling to two new casino resorts and give the Native Americans the same rights as these two new casino resorts. But it leaves out any existing casinos like Magic City or the Paramutuals. And so I see a big fight coming in on that. And I think that the Speaker of the House, he's going to be the one who's going to be, just like he basically stopped the Miami Dolphins stadium bill last year.
By not letting it get
like not letting it get heard. I think that he's, going to stop this. And I think one of the things that I've been hearing, actually, and I don't know what you guys have been hearing, but the gossip, the rumor mill is that they want to put gambling on the ballot as a ballot initiative.
Who wants to put it on?
I think Will Weatherford wants to put it on the ballot as a ballot initiative.
That's interesting, because I thought everybody was trying desperately to avoid a ballot issue, because every time it gets on the ballot, except for that one time where it squeaked through in an off year, it has been shut down.
But they want to pass it. They're going to pass it eventually anyway. So they'd rather let the people pass it than them do the
dirty work. That way their hands are free.
Well, plus getting it on the ballot gets out the religious right, gets out the Republicans, where we have now possibly a medical marijuana issue on the ballot that's going to drive out the Democrats and the independents.
Well, as I understand the way the bill is structured, it would have it would create these two new resorts. Broward is like salivating for one. But it would also, if there was to be any future expansion of casino gambling, it would have to go to the voters. As I understand it, that's how it would work.
Right.
Talking about the medical marijuana, what is it? It's not that they're going to legalize medical marijuana. They're going to decriminalize a certain type of marijuana for certain children with epilepsy or seizures.
What's on the table now, what's being discussed, is a measure that would decriminalize marijuana for use in this medical instance only. But if they pass that, they might take the medical marijuana issue off the ballot. And that would technically or maybe, strategically, arguably, keep some Democrats and independents at home in a non-presidential year where there's not much driving them to.
Yeah, but how could they take an amendment that's already been,
It's not on the ballot yet. They have the petitions, but they have to. I don't know what the process is, but that's what I'm hearing is that they might make some kind of compromise in order to do that.
Huh. I thought it was set.
Yeah.
We're talking about the 2014 legislative session in Tallahassee, which begins tomorrow with Watchdog Report publisher Dan Ricker, journalist Elaine DeValle with political Cortadito, and Broward Bulldog founder and reporter Dan Christensen on today's Topical Currents. We're going to take a short break. We'll come back, take your calls, your emails, and your tweets.
And we're back. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, Dan Ricker, Elaine DeValle, and Dan Christensen. We're talking about the 2014 state legislative session, which, as Bonnie said, begins tomorrow with the governor's State of the State address. If you'd like to join in with comments or questions, you're certainly welcome. Our number, 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. Also email, that's radio@WLRN.org. And you can tweet us at
Topical Currents.
Right. Getting back to these casino resorts, if they were to come to pass, would the state revenues be set up similar to the parimutuels, where all 67 counties would equally share that money?
As I understand it, that's
the way to get it passed.
Yeah. Well, initially, any corporate entity, say the Sands from Las Vegas, who was active last year in trying to get this passed, they'd have to put up $125 million to bid. However, state is being generous and is willing to return that money if they don't win. After that, whoever wins, they'd have to pay an annual license fee of $5 million, plus the state would take a 35 tax or rake, to use the vernacular, from all the gambling income that they would produce, which would be sizable. So the state sees, a quick fix in terms of bringing in a lot of money. These people, these companies see a way to expand their businesses into a major market like Florida. And the only ones standing in their way are a few politicians right now.
What do the studies show that on the long-term economic effects of big-time casino gambling on communities? It hasn't really been done too much for Newark.
Atlantic
City is still generally a very depressed area, and it's sad because it's now been, I think it's been
a couple decades
over. No, it's been it was in the 70s, I believe, when that happened, and it's brought wealth to the casino owners. It's brought some jobs to the community. But if you drive through Atlantic City, it's been probably 10 years since I've been there. But last time I was there, which was 20 years at least, it still looked like, you know, pretty much of a...
tacky.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I haven't been there many years either, but the small businesses are pawn shops and, you know, strip joints, and it's not the kind of
hard
business
rock.
No, it
we
didn't
want
turn
to
into Las Vegas.
Attract here, I think. Mm. But that said, I think that Miami has a lot of other factors, you know, the tourism, you know, the climate, the international base, that would probably be different, you know, make for a different scenario here.
There's much more to do.
Right, you know.
Yes.
The other big thing that the legislature or this year brings to South Florida specifically is in 2011 there was some reforms of, quote, the Medicaid program, and it's going to be cutting out a huge amount of money for some of the local hospitals, specifically Jackson. Baptist is going to get hit with like $16 million reduction. I mean, it's something that for us down here, Jackson does most of the seed money that brings down this federal drawdown.
But then it's distributed from Tallahassee.
Yes, and at this point, this money is going to be distributed around the state, even though some of these hospitals might be for profit or if minimum didn't even contribute the funds to get the drawdown. And, you know, it's something that, you know, people talk about a technology hub and all this other stuff or a medical destination. You don't have a wand that you wave. It takes years to build up a reputation of being, you know, the place to go for high quality medicine. You're competing against the Cleveland Clinic and, you know, around the other big facilities around the nation. And for us specifically, if this thing goes through and our delegation isn't able to kind of change some of that formulation, which the Herald did a nice piece on over the weekend, it's going to really hurt. You're going to see some real changes in the healthcare. I mean, plus they're already
like
having
what?
Well, they're already having to deal with the ACA in
right.
American, which where revenues and payment levels are going to be down. Our biggest issue is nowhere else in the state of Florida do you have the level of uninsured that we have, even with the Affordable Care Act.
Right. Medicaid. The whole question of Medicaid is the elephant in the room, has been for a couple of years now, and the legislature refuses to pick up the $50 billion in federal aid, plus more than $50 billion, that would pay for
they
Medicaid.
They're still refusing to do that.
From everything that I have read, right. This is a dead issue before the legislature
the
even convenes
tomorrow.
Expansion
of it, it's not going to happen.
Right, which is I don't know. The legislators all seem concerned about, you know, where to pay for things and money, and here's an opportunity to provide health care to the less fortunate. And the state is not willing to do this, and I personally don't understand it.
Especially in an election year. Go ahead.
Well, Renee Garcia has a bill in the Senate that's going to die that's on this. But I think, and I was explaining, I need to see the bill myself, but somebody explained to me that if you read the fine print, yes, we're going to get $50 billion of federal money for Medicaid recipients, many of whom are being identified now as they apply for Affordable Health Care Act and they realize that they're actually entitled to Medicaid. But I think that there's a matching fund requirement, and that's where the Republican-led legislature or House that's looking to be all reelected this year are going to say, no, we're not going to put in $10 million,
right.
$10 billion.
The first couple
Medicaid.
Of not, years, there isn't right. that, but then it works
right.
into where
Correct.
The
it's
state
not,
has to pick up.
Right, it's down the line. It's down the line. So theoretically, they're looking forward on this, concerned about how to fund this down the line. However,
what about this bill where highly trained nurses can open independent practices in nearly every other state but here? The doctors are opposed to it. So the Senate's opposed to it, who's closely aligned with the doctors.
That's somewhere where I think if you look at the ECO and PAC contributions from the medical associations, you'll find a little bit of a connection.
ECO.
Yeah. The Electioneering Communications Organizations.
Right. PAC.
And the PACs are the Political Action Committees. But they're all PACs. You know, they
right.
just have different names.
Apparently, the apparently the doctors, you know, control the Senate or appear to, and the nurses control the House.
Right.
Yeah, that seems headed for disaster also. It's one of those other bills that it looks like it's just going to die.
What about insurance legislation, and particularly flood insurance? That's always a hot topic.
The only thing that I'm aware of it is that they want to try and privatize it in the state for,
right.
I mean, they don't want to eliminate the National Flood Insurance Program,
right.
But they want to
open it up. Right now they see it as a monopoly,
right.
And they want to open it up because the National Flood Insurance had a rate hike last year.
Right.
And so in response, what they want to do is they want to open it up to private insurance companies that right now can't offer policies in Florida, right. So that they can offer policies.
As I understand it,
I think that's going to pass.
The reason it was enacted back in 1968, the National Flood Insurance Program, was that apparently other insurers wouldn't do it. So it'll be interesting to see if this,
right.
Whether they'll do it now.
Well, that's why I think it'll pass, because it's an easy election one. You know, we're making it easier for you to get insurance,
right.
And then we'll see what really happens.
Right, and will it mean anything is the question.
Exactly.
The polls show that Charlie Crist has a lead over Scott should they face each other in the gubernatorial race. What influence will the legislature tend to have on that? Would it be in Scott's favor to be able to close that gap?
Sure. They are all mostly Republicans, so they're going to do whatever they can that would help the governor out, since he's a Republican, too. My guess is that they will tend to do what he wants, except in certain cases where they have other objections, but he needs to score some victories here so he can hold it up for the to the voters as election day nears.
And I think that's why he got his new lieutenant governor. It was important. I mean, it, historically, the last couple of years, the Governor Scott hasn't had the schmoozing and the relationship with the legislature that would have been helpful. He has, the economy has gotten better, but you could also say it's that applies around the nation. But he's not made, he's not been really a policy wonk, excluding, you know, cutting taxes. And that's the big thing for him right now, the $500 million tax cut.
The passage of what bill would most stimulate the Republican base?
I don't think it's any one bill. I think it's just a group, you know, the smaller bills that together will look good. The flood insurance bill. I think that the college sales tax increase, I think they may pass that because it has to be passed by voters anyway, so it's like a pass-through, and they'll pass that. The things that will make them look good.
Well, the governor wants to put some money back in people's pockets by cutting auto
right.
tag fees, too,
right.
by,
right.
you
They'll
know,
find
maybe
a way to
25.
Cut fees and
I don't see how that is going to sway voters, but
I mean, this is kind of this to me, the governor's race this year is kind of what happened in 2004 when you had John Kerry running against Bush 2, and essentially the campaign was, I'm not Bush 2. And in the case of Charlie and Governor Scott, you know, the D's are so, you know, certain people just hate Scott, you know, and on the R side, I mean, Charlie is like kryptonite. You know, what's he going to do? You know, flip-flop. And I just, Jeb Bush years ago said something that always stuck with me, that when you're campaigning, it's much better to campaign on ideas or on a platform or what you're trying to do rather than just, I'm not him.
I think that, frankly, rather than being an asset, the legislative session is just, they're going to try to just make it negligible so it doesn't hurt him in the election. I don't think there's really any one bill or any one issue that's going to help him tremendously other than maybe a cut on our auto tag fees and something like that.
But that, what kind of a difference will that make, though? How much are we talking about?
They're saying up like $25.
Yeah.
Big deal.
It's not a big
really?
Difference. It's not a big difference. Right. To,
it's just the idea that he's cutting something.
It's easy to put it on a mailer and send
right.
it to your
right,
mailbox.
Right.
Well,
you
to flip that a little bit, there's a lot of chatter that the medical marijuana bills and also the vote that's coming up, particularly the vote that's going to come up this fall on an amendment to legalize it, will be harmful to the governor's reelection efforts here. Figuring that it'll pull in a lot of Democrats and liberals and people that want to see that legalized, and that they'll be voting against him.
Who traditionally don't vote in off-year elections.
This right.
is,
right.
It, you know, the people forget, You know, we have a Florida, or we have a Republican legislature, a Republican governor, yet when it comes to presidential elections, we go with the Democrat, right. generally.
And the Republicans had several losses last year at the state right. level that they hope to regain this year because it's a non-presidential year and it's supposed it's supposedly seen as a heavily GOP-driven election.
We're discussing this year's Florida legislative session in Tallahassee. We're going to take a short break and be back with more.
And welcome back to Monday's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman talking about the 2014 legislative session with Dan Ricker, Elaine DeValle, and Dan Christensen. If you want to join in the conversation or you have a comment, the number is 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-9576, or email radio at WLRN.org.
And we'll take a call. This is Anthony. He's in Deerfield. Hi.
Hello?
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, I was been on the line for a little bit. I was just going back to a couple breaks ago. I believe it was Bonnie commented on certain legislation was passed this 2014 year. That Amendment 2 would somehow not be voted on come November. I kind of just wanted to set the record straight that Amendment 2 will be voted on in November, and you know the Florida people will have the power to bring medical marijuana to Florida. I just feel like it was kind of loosely thrown around.
Yeah, she was talking about the legislative bill, what it was aimed at.
Yeah, and if legislation is passed to allow CBDB, which is the non-euphoric form of THC, to be decriminalized, if that's passed before November, then Amendment 2 won't appear on the ballot because we have hundreds of thousands of adults in Florida that are suffering from debilitating illness, too, that are going to need this. So we can't just write them off, can we? And, I mean, that's kind of, I feel like it was a little misleading, and I don't think anything's going to change the fact that we're going to be voting for Amendment 2 come November. Mm. And if I'm under the wrong impression, then please set me straight as well.
Elaine?
I was just under the impression that the bill that would be introduced would cover everybody who had this medical condition and who needed this non-euphoric or would be able to benefit from this non-euphoric form. As far as I'm concerned, it's not. If it's only for children, then yeah, obviously we would need to still have it on the ballot because it would be different.
But I was under the pill form.
But under what conditions will it ever be taken off the ballot? We've come a long way to get it on the ballot.
So well, it's passed.
You know, and whether it's non-euphoric, it's debilitating illness for medical marijuana. And there might be some specific areas of legislation that we're looking to pass, but is that how we're going to trump Amendment 2? Is that how the right plans on getting this off the ballot? And is there any way, please, legally, is there any way that Amendment 2 will not appear on the ballot now after the fact that the Supreme Court has allowed it? United for Care has come a long way to fight to get it on the ballot, and I just I want the people to be informed that come November, it's going to be a while from now, but don't forget, it's time to vote for it.
If the legislation is exact to the ballot language, I would imagine that it would not be on the ballot. If it's not exact,
that's what I wanted to do. I don't mean to interrupt. I just wanted to set the record straight on that.
That's,
I don't want people to forget about. You know, we don't want to leave anybody out on this, and the kids are important as well. And I'm sorry to interrupt. I apologize.
Okay, thanks for your call.
You know, Joe, a real test right now, a bellwether race is, as we were talking about before, the Alex Sink race mm-hmm. over in Tampa against David Jolly, who's a Tea Party GOP candidate. And money is pouring in from around the state. It's neck and neck at this point. The polls are showing. Sink, ran a terrible gubernatorial campaign against Scott back in 2010, but in a smaller, she's being portrayed as, you know, a carpetbagger because she didn't live there, but she's moved. But it's how that race breaks will give a certain indication of what the voting public is thinking. And also, Sink is running very strongly on the American Care Act,
right.
on Obamacare. So
that's going to be the test case, I think, for a lot of campaigns on whether or not that's a good issue to campaign on.
Our telephone number, if you'd like to join in, 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-WLRN. Also, email radio at WLRN.org.
I have something, a question I just don't understand. I don't know who can explain this to me. But on the one hand, there's this measure to tighten reporting requirements of abuse and neglect at the assisted living facilities and establishing this rating system that evidently the House and the Senate are in support of. And on the other hand, they're instituting measures to shield nursing homes from lawsuits, and that also has support from the House and the Senate. Does that jive? Does that make sense?
It does and it doesn't. It doesn't seem on the face to jive, and it really doesn't, because what they're doing is that they are, in effect, increasing the threshold for lawsuits by requiring more reporting. But we don't know. We still don't know if that's going to happen. You know, the reporting to right now that's required isn't done. You know, there's a lot of lackadaisical reporting. There's a lot of holes there. So by requiring more reporting, is the reporting going to get done? That's not necessarily the case, but it's going to make it more difficult for lawsuits to be filed.
We know that one person from, you know, the Broward delegation is going to play a key role in deciding what happens in that. That's Eleanor Sobel. She's a Democrat from Hollywood, Democrat like most Broward types. She's, and I'm not quite sure how this is the case, but apparently she's part of Gates's Senate President Gates's leadership team, and she is also the chair of the Children, Families, and Elder Affairs Committee, and she's going to be a major player on this assisted living facility legislation.
Okay, but they're still going to try to tighten the measures against the lawsuits, but they're still going to...
That's what's out there now. How it's going to evolve, I don't know.
No, and how it plays out. I mean, this is like DCF, the Department of Children and Family. These are assistant living facilities are kind of farther down on the political food chain for a lot of people. And the same with, you know, with DCF, with foster kids, it's terrible. Some of the stories that have emerged over the years, and we, you know, people have tried different methods, but it's a vexing problem.
Let's take another caller. This is Piro in Miami.
Yes, this is Pedro. I was just wondering, when I read the Constitution last time, it started with the words "we the people." And I'm totally confused on how it is that we, the people, vote for something, and then the politicians basically do what they want. They don't really follow what the people tell them to do. I thought they worked for us. So
yeah.
What made you
totally
think that?
Confused.
Yes, you are. You are totally confused.
Yeah, it seems like it, doesn't it?
Talk to the people in the Florida lottery and... part of the issue is while the voters will approve something, there generally has to be some kind of legislation to enable it. And that's where your question kind of falls into what happens.
Maybe there's the old George Carlin routine where he says, you get the politicians you deserve. And there's such a lack of citizenship and voter turnout.
There's a lot of smoke and mirrors. Going back to what we were just talking about the ALFs, you know, and how, you know, on the one hand, we're going to tighten the reporting requirements, and on the other hand, we're going to make it easy, you know, less easy to, you know, file a lawsuit. You know, I see the same thing happening with the stadiums bill. You know, last year we had the Miami Dolphins stadiums bill, and that died on the floor. This year we have an equally weak or weaker bill by State Representative Eric Fresson to create a sales tax rebate program for two new stadiums, one in Orlando and one in Miami, for Major League Soccer. That's not going to go anywhere. Even Fresson himself has said that's not going to go anywhere. Rather, there's another bill under which they're going to change the process. Am I right, fellas? They're going to basically put it into the Division of Business Regulation and create a competitive process for these stadiums to compete and bid for these sales tax rebates. Well, you know, all the sports stadiums that have the rebates aren't going to be bidding for the new process. It's only going to be the MLS soccer stadiums 2 years from now. So it's like it's kind of smoke and mirrors, like saying, well, we're
teams
not going
to don't even exist,
right? But they will exist, you know, as soon as they get this process given to them, you know. And that's why I also think we don't see Stephen Ross making a play offer money this year like he promised to last year, because he knows it's coming next year. He can just go through the competitive bidding process. The legislators will put it in the hands of bureaucrats at the DBR, and then they can say, they can wash their hands of it and say, I didn't do it.
But also, Ross is not a fool in the sense of he really went out on a limb, going after some of the local state reps and elected leaders. I mean, that I'm trying to think, there was the press release that came out. There was a couple of them, but one of them, when they wouldn't hear the bill in the legislature, but I mean, it was vicious. I'm looking at it like...
No, afterwards he funded mailers against the state representatives who killed the bill, and he was, you know, as far as I know, my sources, several of them told me he was actively seeking people to run against them.
But I mean, my point is, this is probably not, given what he did in the past, not the time to go try to make up.
Found a different way to, found a sideways way of doing it.
Right.
You know.
And we'll see how, you know, it's Balica and, what is it, Trujillo? Is it?
Yeah.
And Frank?
Yeah.
We're speaking about the 2014 legislative session with Dan Ricker from the Watchdog Report. Also, Elaine DeValle from Political Cortadito and Dan Christensen from the Broward Bulldog. We'll take another break and we'll be back.
And we're back. It is today's Topical Currents. Our topic today is the 2014 Florida legislative session. And if you'd like to join in, we have lines open, 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. Also, email, if you're a little shy, that's radio@wlrn.org. Before we run out of time, I'd like our panelists to talk about their independent publications and how people can learn more about getting on your mailing list. And Dan?
Yeah, I'm coming into my 15th year. It's watchdogreport.net.
Doesn't seem possible.
Yeah, I know. Time flies when you're having fun. Watchdogreport.net. Or you can email me at publisher@watchdogreport.net. But it's online. There's no ads. It's free. And you can send an email that way. But it's been, I was talking to Dan about it. It's amazing how time goes by. I
mean, how many public meetings do you go to?
A lot. I mean,
I don't know how you can do it.
No, I mean, it all started right after Elian Gonzalez. And we were in such meltdown. We had such... You know, I thought there's nothing I could write that can make our South Florida community any, you know, worse or divided at the time.
And Dan, about the Bulldog, plus you have an event coming up you'd like to tell us about.
Yeah, BrowardBulldog.org is where people can find us. On April 8th, we're going to have an event, a fundraising event, with Dave Barry has agreed to come.
It is a nonprofit, though.
Yeah, we're 501c3.
Obviously with ORG.
Right. So if you make a contribution to us, it's tax deductible. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Dave Barry has agreed to come and appear at an event we're having at the Museum of Art, Fort Lauderdale, on the evening of April 8th. And you can get tickets via our Facebook page.
Broward Bulldog,
whatever it is. And we'll also be putting something up on our site soon. We just began to post that.
So Dave Barry. And the date again? April 8th.
April 8th, correct.
What day of the week is that?
That's a Tuesday evening. I think it starts at 6 or 6:30. Okay. All the information will be is available on it.
And Elaine, tell us about you and Ladra.
Well, Ladra was born in 2010, a year after I left the Miami Herald, where I was for about 18 years. I basically had been feeding my friends political stories and tips that I was getting from my sources that I had developed over almost two decades, but nothing would get into the paper. So I decided to start writing it in the blog, and I called it Political Cortadito, because I'm addicted to the stuff. And I like my politics dark, like I like my coffee. And
Ladra means bark.
Ladra means bark in Spanish. And I do consider myself a watchdog like Dan. He's the granddaddy of the watchdog bloggers. And
there's a lot of barking going on.
No. She barks. I woof.
I cover mostly the county, but I do cover the state legislature, particularly, you know, during this time when we have our county people up in Tallahassee taking care of business for us up there, or not.
I just want to mention that the State of the State address is tomorrow morning at 11. Governor Scott will be giving that. We'll be carrying that live.
I can't wait.
Sure.
If I might, I'd like to talk about a local bill that Broward's got, which is interesting. Gwendolyn Clark Reed is a North Broward state rep. Has filed a bill called the Juvenile Civil Citations Bill that would require law enforcement officers throughout the county, upon making contact with a juvenile who admits to have committed a misdemeanor, to issue a civil citation in certain circumstances instead of arresting them and hauling them off to jail. The sheriff, Scott Israel up there, I know, is behind this too. It's an interesting concept. It's going to be brought before the legislature. It'll be interesting to see if they decide to pick it up and run with it here.
The other save a lot of court time.
Yeah, the idea, and I think the principal thing is that you don't ruin some kid's life because they screwed up.
Right.
You know, these are misdemeanors, not felonies. Not, you know, if you pull a gun on somebody, this doesn't apply.
The other, I mean, we were talking about it in the break. Miami-Dade Expressway Authority may feel a little heat this year in the legislative session since State Rep Jeanette Nunez, along with Rene Garcia, have introduced legislation that would kind of clip the fiscal wings of MDX. And I was told by one of the MDX does all the freeways, and that it's about $100 million hit to the entity. And as far as funding new road construction, everything else, it's a big deal. And apparently the bond companies and the bond rating companies are already getting very jittery about it. But we'll see. This has been something that Juan Zapata, who's now a county commissioner, has been battling about.
Yeah, he came out against it. I mean, very much in favor of it at the APO meeting.
Right.
But Sally Hayman, on the other hand, is not so much in favor because she thinks it takes away some of our local control. But this was in reaction to the MDX last year increasing rates and basically snubbing 22 elected officials who went before them and said, don't do this. This is going to hurt our communities. And they ignored them. So State Representative Nunez felt she had no other choice but to limit their ability.
And they're coming back with a report because the thrust of the Zapata question was, is it West Dade that's paying the burden?
Northwest.
Northwest. You know, he goes, the east side is fine, but it's West Dade residents that
Northwest
are paying.
Northwest and Southwest Dade, too. I mean,
well, that's true in Southwest.
But if you live in Homestead, it costs you $40 or $50 more a month to come if you commute downtown for your job.
Right. Yeah. We're short on time. Let's touch on ethics, Dan.
Yeah.
Well, there's a follow-up bill this year. Last year was the Senate and the House passed and the governor signed a fairly sweeping ethics reform bill. And this year they're coming back trying to plug some holes that they didn't either know about last year or hadn't addressed. And there's a couple of things. One, there's going to be a new residency requirement for lawmakers here, which is sort of a product of a fight between Senator Sachs of Palm Beach and Broward County, who rented a condo from her Broward political consultant, Judy Stern, and Stern's daughter here to establish residency. And ethics chairman Jack Latvala, who had backed her Sachs's rival, Ellen Bogdanoff, has been gunning for Maria Sachs ever since, and that's what this is all about.
And that was a tough race.
Yeah, it was.
That was a really vicious one.
And then the other key part of the bill is something that the Bulldog wrote about, and that was the fact that at special districts, independent special districts throughout the state, there's nearly 1,000 of them, there's no requirements that lobbyists register or disclose their clients or how much they make or any of the other standard disclosures that lobbyists have to make, both before the legislature and at a lot of local governments, especially here in South
Florida. And that was a great piece. You did a real nice public service.
I think it also, doesn't it also tighten or require more financial disclosure and reporting from boards members and appointed officials, not just elected officials?
It may, if it has, I hadn't actually seen that. It wasn't in the original part of the bill that I saw.
It might have been amended.
But they were talking about, too, expanding lobbying requirements. Here in South Florida, virtually all the local governments have lobbyist registration requirements. But if you go up In rural areas throughout the state, there's a lot of places where there is no lobbyist registration requirement. So they were thinking about, originally they had told me they were going to put that in the bill, but it was not. Maybe that will find its way back into the bill before
the,
it's done.
The smaller groups saying we can't afford, you know, to have that kind of...
Right. Well, the lobbyist registration requirements are being focused on the largest right. of these independent
districts. Well, we have one person here on the MDX board, Robert Holland.
Oh, okay.
Well, and Maurice,
who's
stepping down from the MPO.
Okay. Right.
Well,
Robert for 5 years hadn't filed because apparently his accountant had left town or something, and he got into me. He says, "You know, I'm an upright guy and everything." I said, "Yeah, but it's 5 years.
We just about run out of time.
We want to thank you all for joining us, Dan Christensen of the Broward Bulldog, and your website is.
BrowardBulldog.org.
Okay, and Elaine DeValle has the Political Cortadito and publishes under the name Ladra, and your website?
PoliticalCortadito.com.
And Dan Ricker is of the Watchdog Report.
WatchdogReport.net.
WatchdogReport.net.
And he's in his 15th year. How about that?
Well, we want to thank you all.
We've got to have a party.
No.
For barking with us today. Yeah.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
And that wraps up our legislative preview. Our producer is Richard Ives. Technical direction from online producer Paul Leary. We have free audio archives and downloads at our website. That's WLRN.org. More information, promos, links, and discussion at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Tomorrow's program looks at what constitutes true genius and the history of how it's viewed with FSU history professor Darren McMahon. He's written Divine Fury. And today's calendar on this day in 1845, 169 years ago, Florida becomes the 27th U.S. state. The first governor under statehood, William Moseley. He'd been a college roommate of President James K. Polk, who took office March 4th. And on this day in 1931, 83 years ago, Cab Calloway records Minnie the Moocher, the first jazz number to sell a million copies. Heidi, 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 Ho. It was first used in a Betty Boop cartoon and was reprised in 1980 in the Blues Brother movie. And one more while we head for the Club Tropicana. On this day in 1866, 48 years ago, the death of actor William Frawley of I Love Lucy and My Three Sons fame at age 79. Get this, off camera, he and TV wife Vivian Vance greatly disliked each other. Frawley introduced the song Melancholy Baby in his vaudeville days. Our theme music, created by Michael Levine. And we leave with an exchange from the lovable Mertzes, Lucy and Ricky's landlords. Ethel says, "Sometimes I wish I'd married a Cuban." Fred says, "That makes two of us." Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, here and now up next from NPR News.